for some football.
We're ready for some football, baby.
Welcome to the FTN DataCast, the fantasy football podcast where data drives the discussion. Here are your hosts, Adam Pfeiffer and Tyler Lochner.
What is going on, everybody? Welcome back once again. This is the FTN DataCast, presented, of course, by the FTN Network. Adam Pfeiffer here on recording this on Easter evening here on Sunday night. So everybody that celebrates, hopefully you had a great Easter, a great weekend as well. Joined, as always, by my co-host, Tyler Lochner. You can follow him on Twitter at LochnerNFL. Tyler, what's up, man? How was your weekend? I enjoyed a lot of basketball. I pretty much didn't move from my couch since Saturday around 5 until, you know, obviously did some things with the family on Sunday. But, you know, I got off the couch to do this podcast, if that counts.
I don't think that counts, but we can pretend like it does. I had a good weekend, lots of family time, but exhausting. Sounds kind of a little bit like the opposite of yours. So I guess we balance each other out there.
Yeah, I had a fun weekend. So real quick before we get started, and by the way, today's episode, we're going to revisit this. Obviously, it's still very early. We're in the middle of April, but this will be like our first edition of previewing some potential bust candidates for the 2022 season. We obviously did breakouts last week. Again, this will change as soon as, you know, 2 weeks from now when the NFL draft happens, but we're going to preview some players that, you know, have caught our eyes. You know, it's tough to ever say you just won't draft a player, but players that as of right now we're a little bit more hesitant to draft. Before we get to that, like, I had a fun weekend. So I coach football. I coach a, you know, 17U actually team for football. We had a tournament that took place in MetLife Stadium. Really cool event. Bunch of teams from all over the country come out, make the trip to MetLife, and they get to play at least minimum 3 games in MetLife Stadium. And obviously with the game being in MetLife where the Giants and Jets play, I was kind of teasing the kids prior, saying, yo, guys, Saquon Barkley's going to be there, kind of just messing around with them, having no idea who was going to be there. We're signing the team up and getting everybody's, you know, jerseys and getting the team set up at the front desk. Saquon Barkley walks by. Like, no idea he was going to be there.
What?
Yeah, he was there. I don't think it had anything to do with the fact that it was in the Giants stadium, but his daughter was playing in the tournament, which was really cool. There's a bunch of different age brackets, and he was there, and the kids got to meet him, take pictures with him. A bunch of the kids got cleats and gloves signed by him, and I felt bad for him because, like, at one point, like, it was pretty obvious that he was in attendance, so obviously a lot of people were trying to make their way to see him, and he was just trying to watch his daughter play football, but he took the time to take pictures with a lot of kids, made a lot of kids' days on Saturday, so I thought that was really cool. Saquon Barkley was in the house. I was just joking with the kids saying he was going to be there, and sure enough, around 11 o'clock, he walks right by us as we're signing in. So,
Dude, let's go.
Yeah, not that he's listening, but shout out Saquon Barkley.
I wrote up a little bit about Barkley on an article this week of potential RB1 candidates, like players that could finish as the overall RB1. And even though his ADP is nowhere near number one, I still wrote up Barkley because I think if all the cards fall right,
I want a Saquon Barkley resurgence here because I think it's very simple to do so because there's so much talent in the NFL. But if we get even remotely healthy season from Saquon Barkley, it'll be so much easier to remember this is one of the greatest running back prospects we've ever seen, like legitimately. So, yeah, sign me up for Saquon Barkley coming back to full strength. And again, we talked about the Giants last week with Kadarius Toney, but Brian Daboll, Saquon Barkley, any improvements to the offensive line, they have 2 first-round picks in the draft. So, yeah, like, Saquon Barkley, that was awesome. And they, like, the kids' days were absolutely made. Like, it got to the point where I had to get them refocused for our second game because they had already gotten autographs and pictures with Saquon. So, yeah, shout out Saquon Barkley. What a legend. But, yeah, you talked about some articles. We have so much great content coming up at FTN Fantasy, obviously coming up through the next months, but especially this week. So make sure you keep it locked. We're going to be doing a kind of a preview series, I think, starting this week, where a bunch of us are doing articles, kind of previewing every NFL team, every division before the NFL draft, team needs, who they could be targeting, how their season went last year, stuff like that. So that's starting, as well as a ton of great stuff. I know Josh Larkey's doing a ton of best ball content right now. He has his fades article coming out on Monday. You're probably listening to this on Monday. So keep it locked in, FTN Fantasy, FTN Daily, FTN Bets. But Tyler, let's get into some potential bust candidates for 2022. We'll start at the quarterback position. And again, like, you might differ, but I wouldn't say the players that we are going to talk about today are just straight up no shot, nothing you can do. I won't draft this player. But at this moment, we have concerns and we're not going out of our way to draft them. Who is the first player for you? And I guess before you do that with quarterback, like, is that kind of how you, because again, like breakouts, bust, sleepers, they can have a lot of different meanings. I think a bust candidate is somebody that just, I personally believe, will fall short of their expectation or their ADP. And again, ADPs are going to change. It's only April 17th, April 18th. But how do you value it, and who are you looking at quarterback?
Yeah, no, most simply, I value it the same way. But I also don't think, this is not set in stone, but I don't think that a player that you draft like in the 10th round or later can really be labeled a bust.
Sure.
I think the player has to be someone that you really spend some decent draft capital on. So, you know, with that in mind, the players that I think we're talking about today are all players that you're drafting and you're expecting them to be your starters in fantasy. So looking at the quarterback position, this guy's going in the top five. I absolutely love him as a player, but I'm not going to lie. I do think that there's a decent chance that he does not pay off his draft capital, and that is Kyler Murray. Again, I love Murray. I was all over him last year, and for the most part, he was a flop. Pinpointing the exact reason, I don't know. Maybe there was some turmoil in Arizona. I remember the whole saga just a couple weeks ago where he completely erased Arizona from all of his social medias, but he came out of the gates hot. He had over 35 fantasy points in both weeks one and two, which is like the ceiling. It's why you draft Kyler. You're really expecting 20 points every week, and then you're expecting ceilings of 35 plus points. But he actually started the season pretty hot. He was a fantasy quarterback one in five of his first seven games, but then he only had three QB1 finishes for the rest of the season. So the first half of the season, a QB1 basically every week. The second half of the season, a QB1 about 30% of the time. That is really rough. And then I actually looked back even further, and he struggled even further than that. In weeks 1 to 11 of the 2020 season, Murray was a fantasy quarterback one, so 11 straight weeks. But then he only reached that mark once from weeks 12 to 17 in 2020. So for the last... For his last 20 games, he has only been a fantasy quarterback one nine times. So for a quarterback that is going in the top five, usually in terms of quarterback ADP, I do not want a quarterback that's only going to be a fantasy QB one half the time. So that really terrifies me. And I do think that the biggest risk factor to Murray is James Conner. Now, Conner is Arizona's goal line back. It was kind of Murray, honestly, in 2020, but last year, Connor had 18 goal line carries and Murray only had five. Compare that to 2020. Murray had 11 rushing touchdowns. Last year, he only had three. Last year, he only had five. That part of Murray's game is his biggest. That's his biggest weapon for fantasy, right? Is his rushing and his rushing touchdown. The rushing is still there. The touchdowns might not be, and that scares me.
Yeah, so Kyler for me last year, like, he was like, he had that amazing start against Tennessee, and then he had like, there was a stretch where that those first three games of the season he had a rushing touchdown in every game, and a lot of them were at the 1 or 2 yard line. They go kind of like heavy and they just run a bootleg and Kyler walks into the end zone. That was their kind of bread and butter play a lot. And then, like you mentioned, James Conner really just, it wasn't just the fact that he was the goal line back, but he was also getting touchdowns from like 8 yards out, 7 yards out. And the more efficient he was, they were firmly comfortable giving him all the goal line works. Like only, like you mentioned, 18 goal line carries. Only Jonathan Taylor had more carries inside the five last year than James Conner. And Conner obviously missed some time too. So like, I think for Kyler, like, I don't have him as a top five quarterback, I don't believe. I'll have to double check my rankings. But I know I have easily Josh Allen, Lamar Jackson. I still have Mahomes over him. I think I have Brady. So like he's closer to like QB 7 or 8 than he is to QB like 4 or 3 for me. So I would agree. Like I don't have, and like I have worries about this offense. Like
they, I think he's being drafted in the top 5 though. So I think, you know, I think you're sure. lower on him too. Yeah.
No, I'm definitely lower on him than consensus. Like they brought back AJ Green the other day, but like I still have concerns about this receiving group because Hopkins is great. Obviously the targets weren't there last year, but he's still, you know, at worst, like even if you want to be conservative with DeAndre Hopkins, he's a top 7 receiver in the NFL. Like, I don't think anybody can argue that. Maybe not fantasy wise anymore because we have Justin Jefferson coming on and Jamar Chase coming on, all these young receivers, but he's still a top 10 receiver in the NFL. My problem with them, like Cliff Kingsbury doesn't help Kyler Murray much either because they don't move DeAndre Hopkins around the formation. He literally plays on the left side like 70% of the time, which makes no sense because so many of Kyler Murray's passing attempts go to the middle of the field. He doesn't throw outside the numbers a lot, which Hopkins doesn't go to the middle of the field because he doesn't play in the slot as much as you would like.
That's a good find.
And it's really frustrating watching this offense. Plus, you have the fact that they are clearly more prone to run the football with James Conner, especially in close. The one thing I will say, while I was surprised, there was a stretch where Kyler was clearly a little bit banged up and then had the injury against Green Bay. The rushing kind of fell off in weeks 5 through 8, got hurt in week 8, and then sat out weeks 9, 10, 11, and then had a bye in week 12. The concern I had coming out of the bye was, is he going to run as much? The rushing came down, the rushing yards completely plateaued. It was good to see the first game. It was a windy, rainy game in Chicago, but he had 10 carries for 59 yards and 2 touchdowns, had 61 yards the game following, 74 yards. So the rushing was still there. Like you mentioned, the yardage is there. But if the touchdowns come down, that obviously, or stay down, that is a concern. So I agree. As of right now, like, I would rather have, obviously, Josh Allen, definitely Lamar Jackson, Patrick Mahomes. Like, he was, like I said, he's closer to QB 7 or 8 for me than he is towards ADP. So I like that call. You also have Russell Wilson written down here. And I think it's interesting because there's obviously a lot of hype around Russell Wilson, right? Going to this Denver team with a ton of weapons. It's a new offense. It's exciting. We've seen, it's like every year, right? Russell Wilson starts the season first 8 weeks. He's like the QB3 in fantasy. He always starts off hot. And then whether it's by, really, it's not by injury. The only time it was by injury was last year because he had the thumb injury or whatever. But mostly it's been Pete Carroll just taking the ball out of his hands. What do you think of him in Denver? Because we talked about Cortland Sutton a lot. We've talked about, you know, the pass catchers a lot. But I feel like a lot of people are, I would say most people are probably more towards, this is it for Russell Wilson. Like, this is him going back to top 5 status at quarterback for fantasy. But you have some hesitations.
I do have some hesitations. And to be perfectly clear, it would not surprise me if Russ finishes a top 5 fantasy quarterback. But it would also not surprise me if he finished as like the QB 15. So I really think he's a joker card this year. And I am capitalizing on the hype for Russ. Like, you've nailed it. Everyone is really excited for him to get out of Seattle and land on an overall good team in Denver. But I do have those concerns. So I'm fading him. And I think it's largely because of the hype. But there's also some stats behind why I'm fading him. And it's, again, it's really hard to separate the player from this situation, especially when it's the quarterback. But the quarterback dictates a lot of the situation they're in. So again, like I did with Kyler, I actually just straight up looked at Russ's production from a fantasy perspective. And on a points per game basis, he was in the QB10 range last year, but he only finished as a fantasy quarterback 1 in 50% of his games. And when, to put some context around that, if you're finishing as a fantasy quarterback 1 in about 50% of your games, I consider you more of a streaming quarterback option rather than a weekly starter, right? Like 50%, that's what you're looking for from like a Kirk Cousins type player, like a really, really good streaming quarterback, but not somebody that you, Derek Carr, exactly. And when we go back all the way back to week 10 of 2020, Russ has only finished as a fantasy quarterback 1 36% of the time. I was shocked to find that. That is really bad for a player that we know is as good as Russ. And we talk about his situation in Denver. Like, he's got Cortland Sutton now. He's got Jerry Jeudy now. You're never going to convince me that's a better duo than DK Metcalf and Tyler Lockett. Like, it's not like he had bad weapons in Seattle. Mm-hmm. So that's the other part of this that concerns me. Really, the strongest argument for Wilson in Denver is that Pete Carroll is not his coach anymore. And Pete Carroll has just like this run philosophy. But I will also say, it's not like Denver is some fast, high-paced passing team. They had the fifth fewest snaps in the NFL last year with 1,036 total snaps. That was about 80 more than Seattle. Seattle was the slowest paced team in the league, but it's not like he's going to some Denver team that's the Chiefs, right? That has like this crazy high flying offense. I still think we see the Broncos grind it out. Maybe not as much, especially if Melvin Gordon escapes. But yeah, that's the gist of my concern there, is that there's a lot of hype around Russ, a lot of hype around new situation, getting away from Pete Carroll, but a lot of the things are lining up and he's leaving a really, really good situation where he really hasn't produced for the last 2 years.
Yeah, for me, I think it's going to come down to where he's drafted, because, you know, Jeff Ratcliffe and I are, you know, obviously super subject to change, but our 2022 rankings by position up at ftnfantasy.com if you want to check them out. Both Jeff and I have Russ at quarterback 12 right now. If he's being drafted, which I believe he probably is, around that range, I'm fine with it. But for me, it comes down to volume. And with Nathaniel Hackett calling shots in Denver now, he was so excited about the addition of Russell Wilson. So I hope he's that excitement maintains. And, you know, we talked about this with Courtland Sutton. The numbers for Sutton with Judy were bad last year. It wasn't because Sutton's not a good player. It's just because there weren't enough passes to go around. They barely threw the football last year. Denver last year called pass 23rd highest rate in the NFL at just over 56% of the time. If that can get to league average, I think Russ can still be good enough, because like are Courtland Sutton and Jerry Judy better than Tyler Lockett and DK Metcalf? No, but I think like they have the potential to be this as good. And
that's
like,
fair.
And if you give me Russell Wilson averaging 34 pass attempts per game, like he's just, that's even that number's massive for him. Season high or career high in pass attempts in a season is 558. Like that's his career high. It's not his career. It's his career high. And again, I don't think, you know, Nathaniel Hackett's been in his play calling career, he's been more towards the run, especially two running backs, which is interesting if Melvin Gordon stays. I still think they opened up the offense a little bit. I mean, how do you not? But this is still a team, good overall roster, good defense, good running game. I don't think even with Russell Wilson, they're going to go from 23rd in passing rate to top 10 unless their defense is completely depleted with injuries or something. So I think Russ is like, I personally would be a little surprised if Russ is top 5. If that happens, I think he's going to have to be like, have an outlier pass attempt season. And it's not because he can't, like, we've seen Russ be literally the staple of efficiency on low volume for his entire career. The difference now is quarterback. It's just so deep. Like,
that's true. There's so many rushing quarterbacks too.
Exactly. And Russ didn't run as much last year. And I don't know if he's going to run all of a sudden more again. Not that Russ was like ever running, you know, for 50 yards a game and 10 touchdowns, but he was giving you a decent floor with that. And now you have to compete with Josh Allen, Justin Herbert, Mahomes, Lamar Jackson. We just talked about Kyler. Tom Brady's not going anywhere. Joe Burrow's emerged. If Deshaun Watson plays a full season, he's going to be a top 7 quarterback. Stafford, Dak Prescott, Jalen Hurts, like, and then the rookie quarterbacks from last year, they could all take a step. So I think Russ is going to be good. If he can get up in volume, I think he can be really good. But I just still have, with this, the way this roster is built, I have a little bit of hesitancy towards him all of a sudden massively opening up. But like I think I wrote about an article, like we saw Pete Carroll not let Russ cook. I don't know if Nathaniel Hackett's going to like give Russ the apron and the spatula and say the kitchen's yours. But I think he's going to be like, I think he's going to promote him, you know, to like maybe not head chef, but like co-head chef maybe. I don't know. Like just Pete Carroll was really, Russ was so good that it was really overlooked how bad Pete Carroll was the last handful of years. He was dreadful. All right, Tyler, any other quarterbacks that stand out? Like, again, it's super early. The position's so deep. And the thing with me is, like, I think we can see the position get even deeper if the sophomore quarterbacks entering this season take a step forward.
Yeah, for sure. The quarterback position is actually really awesome this year. I can't remember a year where it's been better from a fantasy perspective. But of quarterbacks going in the top 10, 12-ish range, really the only other one that scares me a little bit is Rodgers, just from losing Davante Adams. I think I would rather take my chances on the other quarterbacks going in that range. But for the most part, I do think it's kind of hard to mess up quarterback this year. Even if you end up as with streamers all year, you're probably going to be pretty set.
All right, let's move on to running back. And I want to start with one team in particular, because you have two players from San Francisco on your list. One I totally agree with. The second I can kind of see. But I want to start with Elijah Mitchell, because when I started doing offseason fantasy football content, especially, I have an article on running back bust candidates for the 2022 season. Elijah Mitchell was the first player I thought of, and I tweeted about it. I was like, I kind of tweeted something along the lines of, like, I have serious concerns about Elijah Mitchell this year. And most of the replies were like, are you crazy? He was amazing. And he was amazing, and he is a great player. But there are a lot of potential red flags. So what did you see in Elijah Mitchell that had you kind of, not maybe running to the hills, but a little bit of trepidation?
The biggest thing for me is that his situation is going to change really drastically in 2022 with Trey Lance as the quarterback. It is going to be a completely different offense with Lance, and Lance is going to take away some of the rushing opportunities that Mitchell saw. His volume was great. I think he averaged 19 carries a game or something like that.
Yep. 18.8.
Yep. The offense ran, I think, top five highest rate, fourth highest rate in football. I have it in front of me now, 48.3% of the time. So they're a run heavy offense. He ran the ball a lot. I do think they're still going to be a run heavy offense, but like I said, I think Lance is going to take those away, and he's going to take away goal line carries. So that's the first, and that's the first reason that I'm a little bit scared of Mitchell. The second is that he just doesn't really catch many passes. He had 26 receptions in 11 games, which, if I'm drafting a running back to be a high upside player, I want one that's going to catch passes. Really, the only running back that doesn't catch passes that I have any interest in is Derrick Henry. Maybe Nick Chubb too, but I never am interested in Nick Chubb for this exact reason. So the fact that Mitchell doesn't catch passes is something that makes him scary to me off the bat too. And then I also looked a little bit closer into his, to some deeper stats for him. Mitchell had 4.7 yard per carry average, which is solid. He had almost 1,000 yards in 11 games. There's really not too many stats to look at that are like, oh, Mitchell had a bad year last year. So I'm very interested to see some of what you found. But I looked at Mitchell's average yards per carry based on the number of defenders in the box. And he absolutely smashed when there were only six defenders in the box. He averaged 6.4 yards per carry, which was tops among all running backs in the league last year. But when there were seven defenders in the box, he was 30th in yards per carry. When there were eight plus defenders in the box, granted, eight plus can be kind of skewed from goal line carries, but when there were eight plus defenders in the box, he was 32nd in yards per carry. So my question is, does having Lance on the team, who's a rushing threat, there's going to be a lot more read options. Does that lead to more defenders in the box, which Mitchell struggled with a bit last year? I'm just not sold on Mitchell as the answer in San Francisco. Also because of the fact that he had really low draft capital. He was a sixth round pick. He wasn't going to be the starter. It took Raheem Mostert getting hurt. The 49ers did draft Trey Sermon in the third round last year. It does seem like Mitchell is just liked or better than Sermon, but I also think that only 1 year is not quite a big enough sample size. I do think draft capital still matters. So I do think there's a chance that Sermon has a bigger role in 2022 as well. I can't stress enough that a third round pick on a running back does not usually get completely given up on after just 1 year where he hardly even played. So that's the other factor that I'm looking at. I really want to hear your thoughts on Mitchell here though.
So there are a lot of factors with this for me. And Elijah Mitchell was great. There was a reason why he passed Trey Sermon on the depth chart. They felt more comfortable with him in training camp and preseason. Then when Mostert went down in that Detroit game in week one, Trey Sermon was a healthy scratch. Like it was Jermichael Hasty and it was Elijah Mitchell. And then Mitchell became the waiver wire darling and Sermon started to kind of carve out a role. And then he got a concussion, I believe, in a game against Arizona that knocked him out of the lineup for a couple games. And then it was just Elijah Mitchell's backfield from there, like you mentioned, nearly 19 carries per game. But I look at it, you know, Mike McDaniel's gone, but this is still Kyle Shanahan's offense, right? San Francisco has had a different leading rusher for four straight seasons now. Carlos Hyde, Matt Breida, Mostert, Jeff Wilson, or five straight seasons, sorry. Hyde, Breida, Mostert, Jeff Wilson, and then Mitchell last year. Now, I'm not saying that's a guarantee it's going to change again, but pretty large sample size. We know this team likes to use multiple running backs. Trey Sermon talked about this a lot last year. Zone running scheme in college, going to a zone running scheme. Like, it was a perfect fit. I think Trey Sermon's going to carve out a role in year two. He obviously wasn't fully up to speed entering his rookie season. And for me, it's Trey Lance who, assuming he starts at quarterback, is obviously going to take some carries away. He averaged around 10 or 11 rushes per game, and I think it was two starts, then one game where he played the second half. So like three games where he played meaningful snaps, he was around 11 carries per game. Here's the other factor. Deebo Samuel, as long as he's on this team, is getting carries. Maybe he's not getting, you know, 5-6, but you look at it last year. We have one of my favorite tools we have for, especially with data, is like the weekly rushing share or weekly target share. You can see a team's weekly, you know, a target share by player by week for a team. So, for example, San Francisco for rushing share. Deebo Samuel from week 11 on, including the playoffs last year, he saw around 24% of the team's rushing attempts. And like, he was one of the five best players in football last year. Like, as long as he's on that team, you're not just going to stop giving him the football. So you have Trey Sermon, Trey Lance, and Deebo Samuel, who can all take carries away from Elijah Mitchell. And you also added the fact, like you mentioned, that he is not going to catch many passes. And of those, 31 rushes in those three games I mentioned for Trey Lance, 19 were designed. It's not like it was just he happened to be scrambling. That's going to be part of their offense, design runs for Trey Lance. So between that, the fact that he only ran about 14 routes per game, like, I just think Elijah Mitchell, there is an easy path to this being, you know, it's not just the fact that if he goes 60% of the carries and Sermon goes up to 40, but Debo's getting four carries a game and Trey Lance is going to run the football. So for me, running backs going around him right now, Josh Jacobs, J.K. Dobbins is another player I'm really worried about, but like that's close for me. I probably would lean Mitchell just because he's healthy, and clearly I think Baltimore is worried about their backs if they're talking to Melvin Gordon. But like Josh Jacobs, Barkley, Zeke we'll talk about in a minute. I'd rather have those running backs over Mitchell still despite his breakout rookie season. Travis Etienne and PPR, I would rather have Devin Singletary. Shocker. This changes, obviously, if Breece Hall is drafted by Buffalo. But if Breece Hall is drafted by Buffalo or Houston or almost wherever, if he has decent draft capital, I would prefer Breece Hall over Elijah Mitchell. So, yeah, I'm in lockstep with you. I have concerns. I think he's going to be good on a per-carry basis, but I think Trey Sermon's going to still have a role on this team. And then let's talk about Deebo, because you have Deebo Samuel written down, who obviously wants an extension. He wants a new deal. We'll see if that plays a factor in anything, but are you just expecting him to not break off these long touchdown runs? And Deebo's so interesting because he was quote-unquote injury-prone before the season. It's like a lot of players are injury-prone until they're not, and then you remember that they are incredible football players, and that's exactly what we saw with Deebo last year.
Yeah, I'll preface this by saying, obviously, Deebo is just an incredible talent, and I always laugh when people on Twitter are like, oh, this guy's going to be the next Deebo Samuel. And it's like,
yeah, no, that needs to stop.
It's just not true. There's people in his position are there because they're just better than other people.
And also, like, Debo Samuel is built different, literally. Like, he can truck defenders. Like
I love watching him play. He's so fun to watch. Like he's just incredible.
These receivers that keep getting, like, talked about, like, oh, they're going to be used. Like, even Tyreek Hill. Tyreek Hill is an amazing player. But in terms of breaking tackles, he's not Debo Samuel. Like, there is no Debo Samuel next man up. Like, it's just, he's one of one.
Yeah, he's 100% one of one. The concern, you kind of gave it away in a sentence, but yeah, he was just hyper efficient last year. And for a player that often is coming off draft boards at the end of the first round, he's a pretty popular player to take on the 1-2 turn. It's just really expensive for a player that is going to regress in terms of efficiency next year. And for a wide receiver, I guess I'll put it this way. Debo ranked outside of the top 25. I think he was 33rd in air yards last year. This is among wide receivers. So 33rd in air yards, but top 5 in total yards. That is a really, really hard pace to keep up. His racer, which stands for, I don't know. Actually, I'm going to be honest with you. I do not know what racer stands for, but it's the ratio of total, like, actual receiving yards compared to air yards. Debo is at 1.36. So that means he turned every one air yard into 1.36 actual yards. And among wide receivers that had at least 50 targets, that was the third highest rate. And the other guys in that range were Rondale Moore, who also, you know, can break off long catches, and Kendrick Bourne, who had some really long touchdowns last year too. But neither of those guys had nearly as much volume. So the bottom line is Debo was just setting a pace that, unfortunately, he's not going to be able to keep through the air. I do think his rushing usage is going to be there still. I think from week 9 onwards, he had between 5 and 8 carries every single game. I think you said 4 earlier as kind of like his rushing floor. And I would agree with that. I think we're going to see Debo between 4 and 8 rushing attempts for pretty much every single game. But he scored a rushing touchdown in all but 2 of those games over the second half of the year on only 5 to 8 carries per game. That's not going to happen either. So it's just like this hyper-efficient player. Yes, Debo's going to score touchdowns. Yes, he's going to have these highlight reel plays. Yes, he's going to have long touchdowns. It's just not going to happen as consistently as it did last year. And then just to talk a little bit more about my concern over his volume, we know that receiving volume is a little bit more bankable. It's a little bit more predictable than rushing production, right? Like, if you only get 5 to 8 rushing attempts per game, you really cannot expect a player to be ripping off average, you know, 10 yards per carry with a touchdown every single game. It's just not going to happen. If he's only having 5 to 8 carries per game, there's going to be several weeks where he has 20 rushing yards and 0 touchdowns. So as a wide receiver, can he make that up through the air? Last year, the answer was yes, but over the second half of the year, when he started running the ball more, he started seeing way, way, way fewer targets. He wasn't first on the team in targets over the second half of the year. He wasn't even second on the team in targets.
And I believe that was coinciding with Ayuk becoming part of the rotation. Brandon Ayuk really played well when he got acclimated again. Like, he was playing more snaps than Debo because he was not coming off the field.
Yep. So Kittle, over the second half of the year, Kittle had 59 targets, Ayuk had 55, and then Samuel had 43. So over the second half of the year, Samuel finished 3rd on the team in targets, receptions, yards, and receiving touchdowns. Hmm. So all of that scares me for a player that is going at the end of the first round. So the bottom line is, I do think Debo is a fantasy wide receiver 1 this year. I just don't think he's a player that I want to take at the end of the first round. There's some wideouts going right behind him. Like, I don't have the list in front of me, but I know AJ Brown.
Yeah, I was literally going to say I would rather, and I'm going to make this move like right when we get off here. I would rather have Jefferson, Chase, Diggs, obviously Cup, but Jefferson, Diggs, Chase, AJ Brown, and Adams is close. I probably would still lean at like.
The, I would still go Adams.
The running back, you know, the running back usage is good. It's fun. It gives him the ball more, but a carry is not as valuable as a reception.
Nope.
We know that. So like, that's same with Tyreek Hill. Like everybody's talking about, oh, Mike McDaniel might use him like Debo. Like, I don't really know if I want that. Like, just throw him the ball.
It was so basically like, the problem is it was basically as efficient as a reception for Debo last year.
Right.
And that's just not sustainable. I'm gonna pull some of these stats up right now just to look at it. I should have had these in front of me, but his rushing production was just off. It was just unreal. He had 81 rushing attempts, and how many rushing touchdowns did he have? I gotta find this.
I know he had a stretch where it was like late in games, every other game, he was ripping off like a 30 yarder. It was okay. Ridiculous.
During the regular season, he had 59 rushing attempts and 8 rushing touchdowns.
That's insane.
Dude, that is not going to happen again.
Yeah. I mean, I love Debo, but like we talk about regression numbers every offseason for fantasy. Like there's your regression candidate right there. And it's not to say Debo's not going to be one of the 10 best offensive players in football again, but like, to that extent, I struggle with it. So, and yet, like, again, we also have, he was getting those carries in Jimmy Garoppolo's offense. If Trey Lance is under center, the offense is going to be different. And who knows, like, maybe Trey Lance will throw to Kittle more. To be fair, I think Lance did target Debo a lot during the stretches he started. But again, I think Ayuk wasn't playing much then. So, I think the Brandon Ayuk situation is very slept on because
he Ayuk was, is good, dude.
Dude, yeah, like, he was obviously, like, people were frustrated because he wasn't part of the offense. He was, you know, he wasn't up to speed or whatever. And he was, you know, kind of in the doghouse or whatever. But then when he was good to go, not only was he playing a lot and playing well, like I said, he was like 90% of snaps all the time, but he was out targeting Debo Samuel. And Debo was more towards like 4 or 5 targets per game. And that's not going to cut it for, like you mentioned, if Debo was, it's completely different. Debo was, we hadn't seen Debo play a full season and be this good. So he was going late in drafts. Mm-hmm. That was a borderline first round pick. Like, I'm sorry, I'm taking the guaranteed 10 targets a game almost from Diggs and 10 targets a game from Justin Jefferson and 8 to 10 targets per game from Jamar Chase. Like, I agree with you. I'm going to move Debo down. I had him at wide receiver 6 right now, so I had him behind those players anyway. But I might move him behind like AJ Brown, CeeDee Lamb will be close. But I think the numbers you brought up on Debo are very, very strong. And that entire offense is going to be interesting. Like, does this mean we're just off this offense? Or are we going to draft Kittle or Ayuk? Because there's clearly a lot of question marks between regression, between potential Trey Lance at quarterback. And then Kittle's the same kind of boat, right? It's like, we know he's one of the best, if not the best tight end in football, but he run blocks so damn much. So, like, if you got points for run blocking, he would be the consensus 101 every single year, without question.
My two favorite players on, first of all, my favorite player on the 49ers just through and through is Kittle. He's awesome to watch.
I think mine's Kyle Juszczyk, and I don't know if I'm kidding. I might be legitimately serious. Like, he's awesome.
Dude, didn't he score a touchdown in the Super Bowl a couple of years ago?
Dude, Kyle Juszczyk runs like they line him up out wide. Like Kyle Juszczyk can do everything.
He really can. I think just overall, since we're talking about a lot about the 49ers, I will be drafting Trey Lance and I will be drafting Brandon Ayuk. And then at current cost, I will probably not be drafting Samuel, Kittle, or Mitchell. But obviously if they drop some, then they're right back in the radar. It's not like I don't want those players. I just
right
at their current cost.
I mean, I still think it's a long shot that it doesn't happen, but we'll see if Debo's even on the team. I expect a deal will get done.
That would
be
wild.
He changed their entire offense.
He's like super in his prime now, right? Like,
yeah, he's just like they don't.
How old is he? He's 26.
Yeah, I was literally going to guess 26.
Has he been in the league that long? I thought this was only like his second year.
No, Debo's been in the league for a little bit. It's just again, he's been hurt a lot.
Our third year.
He's just been hurt a lot. This was his third year, yeah.
This is his third year. So he's a little bit, I guess that makes sense. He wasn't like super young as a rookie.
Yeah, he came into the league at 23. So,
yeah.
But yeah, like I'm just glad he stayed healthy. He was awesome.
Me too. Yeah, he was awesome.
Let's go to another running back who started awesome. And then, man, this was every week. It was Tony Pollard needs to play more. Tony Pollard needs to play more. But Ezekiel Elliott, for overall numbers, he was the RB6. That was mostly due to volume. I have Zeke as a potential bust too, but here's the problem. Here's why I might change that stance. He might be like a fourth round pick this year. And I'll tell you right now, Zeke is obviously not as explosive as he was a couple years ago, right? And Tony Pollard's clearly a part of this offense. But Dallas is not going to stop giving Zeke the ball, especially given the contract he has. I'm telling you right now, especially if I start receiver heavy, if I see Zeke available in the fourth round, I will not hesitate to draft him. And I'll kick it to you in a second to talk about some of the concerns. I will preface it by saying this. He obviously played through that partially torn, what was it, MCL? It was like week five, right before the week five game against the Giants where he was dealing with it. He said it was bothering him. At least I believe it was that game. He obviously didn't do anything in the week one game against Tampa. Dallas wisely abandoned the run in that game. But then 16 for 71 and a touchdown against the Chargers, 17 for 95 and two touchdowns against Philly, 20 for 143 and one against Carolina in the Giants game, 21 for 110 and one. Ripped off long runs, looked good. And then the injury was bothering him, was under 4 yards a carry in all but like two games the rest of the season. I think Zeke is clearly not the amazing running back he was before, but he's also 26. I don't think he's washed. How do you view Zeke? And I'm sure Tony Pollard will be a factor because everybody was saying play Tony Pollard more, and I get it. The one thing I will say is, of course, Tony Pollard is more explosive than Zeke. I'm not denying that. He's also, of course, he's going to look more explosive when he's getting carries and touches in space opposed to Zeke getting carries up the middle. I want people to remember that, though.
Dude, the fact that you just said Zeke is only 26 years old still just blew my mind. I thought you got it wrong. I just went and double-checked.
I think a lot of people will think he's like 29 because Zeke did come into the league relatively early, and Zeke has been so good for so long. But yeah, he entered the league at 2016. I think what makes him even seem older is because he doesn't miss a lot of time due to injury, and he gets 400 touches almost every year. So it's like you just see so much of him.
So yeah, I'm not really breaking new ground, I guess, by putting Zeke in potential bust category. And I do agree with you that if his price slips enough, he becomes a solid purchase, especially because I don't think Tony Pollard is going to become the goal line back. And so Zeke's potential for double digit touchdowns is as strong as ever. But he has become overly reliant on touchdowns, which, as we know, are not as bankable in fantasy. He had 12 total touchdowns last year. He was the RB17 on a per game basis, and that's right around where his ADP is right now. So I think people are expecting him to be about the same player this year, which I guess I really haven't made my mind up on if he's going to be the same player, if he's going to be better or worse. So I think that's kind of just like everybody hedging, right? Like, oh, let's just draft him kind of like he produced last year, which I think is fine for now, but eventually you do have to take a stand. The fact that you brought up his injury, and I can't remember, did we actually know about like the extent of the injury during the season? Or I feel like we found out about it after, right?
Yeah, like everybody knew he was hurt. It was so obvious.
But we didn't know, like,
yeah, it came out after the season. Yeah. It always works like this. Like, after the season, it's, oh, by the way, I was playing through this. But I believe it came out after the season that he was playing with a partially torn MCL. So, like, not an insignificant injury by any means. But Zeke should have – there should have been a stretch for where Dallas sat Zeke for 2-3 games.
They're down, sure. So, just from a stats perspective – you really do have to compare Pollard to Zeke, because as insufferable as fantasy Twitter is with Tony Pollard and just like obsessing over him every single week, every single time he touches the ball, you really can't deny that Pollard is a good player and he looks awesome and he's explosive and he does certainly deserve touches. And last year, Pollard got those touches. He set career highs in carries, rushing yards, receptions, receiving yards. He had a kick return or punt return. I can't remember which, but he had a return touchdown on Thanksgiving. The dude does everything. And he had the second most yards per carry among running backs too at 5.5. Like you said, yes, he's getting the ball in space versus Zeke, who's more of a grinder. But Pollard is going to be, I think, even more involved this year. And what I think, if I had to, you know, full on predict what's going to happen in the Cowboys offense this year, is I think we're going to see a Javonte Williams slash Melvin Gordon split like we saw last year in Denver.
I think that was 50-50 to like the fullest. So that would be pretty bad for Zeke.
Yeah, I don't, it might not be 50-50 to the fullest, but it would not surprise me if those numbers come closer. Like Pollard was at 130 carries last year and Zeke was at 237. It wouldn't surprise me if Zeke was down to 200 and Pollard went up to 160 or 170. And I do actually think that Pollard will catch more passes than Zeke next year too, just because they like getting him the ball in space. Zeke actually had way more receptions than Pollard last year. Pollard had 39 receptions and Zeke had 47. So maybe not way more, but you know, a half a reception each game. I think those at least split. So I think Pollard starts to see the more valuable receiving targets. Zeke obviously stays very relevant in the red zone though. Like I said, I think he's a great bet for 10 total touchdowns. But Pollard is going to be more involved. He set career highs across the board last year. Zeke set career lows across the board. The big question that we don't really know is how much of that was injury related.
Yeah, I think it's a mixture of both. I think he's clearly, he's not old, but like with the work he's gotten since entering the league in 2016 and the fact, like, I think it was a mixture of he's not as explosive, but he was also clearly hurt last year. I think Zeke, when he's right, is still one of the better running backs in football, but you can't deny the fact that Tony Pollard gives this offense some juice. I mean, Tony Pollard had over 100 fewer rushing attempts than Zeke last year. He had 5 more runs of 15 yards or more.
That's crazy.
So, again, he does get a little bit more like favorable touches right in space and stuff, but he clearly has more. But it was also like he was better in yards after contact. He was pretty much better than Zeke in every metric. Yards per carry, yards after contact per attempt. Zeke was 43rd in that department last season. Pollard was like top 12. He's obviously no longer a surefire top 5 fantasy running back. But like, say there's a situation where you go receiver heavy, right? You go Cooper Kupp or Justin Jefferson in the first round or whatever, or you go Kelsey in the second round, and then you go another receiver, Stephon Diggs, DeAndre Hopkins, and you see Zeke in the fourth round. Like, I'm fine going there because if what you say is true and they do give Zeke maybe 15 carries a game instead of 20 carries a game, that's still fine given the fact that he will be the goal line back and still a good Dallas offense in the fourth round of fantasy drafts as opposed to a top 5 overall selection. But I'm interested to see Zeke 100% healthy because he was good before the injury in week 5 or 6. Pollard needs to play, like, especially with Cooper gone and Cedric Wilson gone. Like, Pollard needs to be on the field.
I was just about to bring that up. You know that Pollard is going to be more involved because they got rid of Cooper, they got rid of Wilson, and they only replaced him with James Washington.
Like, yeah, Gallup might miss some time to start the season too. So like,
that is true.
Week 1, their starting offense, their starting receivers could be really, really questionable. I mean, obviously, Dalton Schultz. They need to line Pollard up in the slot more, honestly, because especially with Cooper gone, like,
they're going to, dude. I will be shocked if Pollard doesn't catch more passes than Zeke this year.
I'd be pretty surprised too. I want to wrap up running back real quick. I see Twitter a lot, like Raheem Mostert or Chase Edmonds, and you don't have to draft anybody from this backfield, and I'm not going to. I don't think . We talked about San Francisco's offense using multiple running backs. Again, that's also a Kyle Shanahan thing, but Mike McDaniel is going to do it too. His first move, and again, it's not just him, it's the management stuff, but Miami's first move this offseason, free agency started, they paid Chase Edmonds. Then they bring in Raheem Mostert. And the offensive line is obviously improved, right?
They still have Miles Gaskin too.
Exactly.
Right? They didn't get rid of him, yeah.
And they brought in some improvements to the offensive line, Teron Armstead, I believe Connor Williams as well. But this was still one of the worst run blocking units in football last year. I don't think they're going to be a great rushing offense. They'll be better. They'll be more creative. But I don't want to draft anybody from this backfield. Like, I just don't think you have to. Plus, you have Tyreek Hill and Jalen Waddle, who I think they are going to give carries to in this offense. So for me, late if you want to. Chase Edmonds is a very good pass catching running back. Raheem Mostert is, when healthy, one of the fastest running backs in football. And then Miles Gaskin just kind of isn't really good. Like, I just, for me, I would just, if I were to draft any of them, it'd be like probably Mostert, just because he's going later than Edmonds probably, and I don't want to draft Gaskin. But just I'm avoiding that backfield if I can.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. I will definitely avoid that backfield. I was really hyped when Edmonds was signed, but then they signed Mostert and they kept Gaskin, and I soured on the whole situation.
Yeah, I mean, Edmonds is, it's funny. I made this case last year with Debro. Everybody, like, I think he was talking about Chase Edmonds, and I made the point at the time. I was like, you could draft Chase Edmonds five rounds later, because Edmonds is like a fifth or sixth round pick early in drafts last year, if you remember correctly.
Sixth, yeah. I was seventh round usually. I was all over him. I'm not even going to lie.
I think you were too, because it got on Twitter. I was like, yeah, you can get Chase Edmonds like five rounds later in Buffalo. It's Devin Singletary. And that was my comp, because they were both on offenses that had quarterbacks that can take rushing touchdowns away. They were on pass first offenses at the time, and they were competing with another running back at the time, Zach Moss in Buffalo.
Edmonds was awesome before he got hurt,
though. He was very good. But for me, I've also always been just like, even Bills fans don't like Singletary. I'm like, Singletary's good.
Dude, you will always find a way to talk about Singletary. I'm looking at Edmonds last year. His first weeks. Dude, he was catching so many passes, 4 receptions, 5, 7, 4.
Yeah, I mean, the screen game is so huge in Arizona. I think Rondell's interesting this year.
And he had between 8 and 12 rushing attempts per game. Dude, I am convinced that I was right about Edmonds last year.
No, like, yeah, like I think if Chase Edmonds stayed healthy, he would have been in between like RB 12 and 15.
Also, Connor was also better than I thought he would be. So,
Yeah, it would have been interesting to see where they finish if both stayed healthy the whole year. Like Connor obviously wouldn't have been RB4 or whatever he was, but like they could have both finished as like top 24 backs if Kyler's rushing touchdowns didn't like stayed where they were. Like, it wouldn't have been shocking.
I think there's an alternate reality where they both stayed healthy and they're both still on the Cardinals.
Yeah, it's a good point. Let's go to wide receiver. You have Tyler Lockett listed as a bust, and I really can't disagree. We talked a lot about the FTN number, the FTN passing direction numbers with Courtland Sutton last week about where Russell Wilson throws the ball, deep left, huge part, like 14% of the time. Sutton, top 5 in percentage of targets from that part of the field. Same with Tyler Lockett. Now Russell Wilson's gone. Now you have Drew Lock and Geno Smith most likely throwing passes, maybe Baker, maybe a rookie quarterback at some point. But, Lockett splits and DK splits without Russ. DK was okay because he scored touchdowns. Lockett definitely took a step back.
I remember that those Geno Smith games, it was like all DK, right? Mm-hmm. And there was like very little Lock involved.
I remember I was in a very important matchup in fantasy. It was a Monday night game against the Saints. Geno was starting. That was the game Metcalf had like an 80-yarder very early in the game.
Oh, I remember that.
And I was facing Lockett. So I was like, all right, fine. Lockett just didn't get any looks. His numbers obviously like took a huge step back with Geno under center. And yeah, I mean, we talked like the Lockett-Russ connection has been a top 5 overall connection in the NFL the last handful of years. So it's going to be very tough for him to obviously he and Metcalf aren't being drafted in the top 4 rounds like they were. Metcalf probably still will be, but Lockett probably not, most definitely not. But still, it's tough to find a lot of excitement about this entire offense for fantasy. Despite
it is.
They still have a lot of talented players. Like, they have Penny, they have the two receivers, like, they have Noah Fant, but, you know, quarterback changes so much.
All right, I just pulled this up in the splits tool. In the 3 games without Russ last year, Lockett scored, this one hurts, he scored 9 fantasy, this is half PPR.
He didn't score, right? I don't think he scored a touchdown.
He had 0 touchdowns, yeah. He had 9 fantasy points per game versus 14 with Russ. So that's like a 50%, almost a 50% difference right there in fantasy production. And yeah, a lot of it's touchdowns, but that's what he did with Russ. He just, mm-hmm. He caught deep balls.
Russell Wilson has led the NFL pretty much in end zone throws the last 5 years. And that's a huge, that's not just from inside the 5. He throws
it's like from Metcalf. The 50.
Exactly. That's from like 30, 40 yards out. And those go to Tyler Lockett.
Yeah, no, Lockett's been awesome with the deep balls. Last year, he had 25 deep targets. So this is balls that traveled at least 20 yards in the air. That was 3rd behind Justin Jefferson and Ja'Marr Chase, which, by the way, is just like totally unfair that those guys played in college together with Joe Burrow. But focusing on Lockett here, over 21% of his targets were deep. And that was like by far the highest among qualified wide receivers. And he was really, really good with those targets too. He caught 20 deep balls, which is the most in the league. And he also had 730 yards, which was the most, and then 6 touchdowns on deep balls. Only Jamar Chase had more. And it was just like the perfect pairing. We've talked about this. It was the perfect pairing with Wilson. Wilson threw a deep ball on 19% of his passes. These are all stats from FTN's tools, by the way. And I think if you look, you'll be like, oh, but Russ ranked first with 19% of his balls were thrown deep. And Drew Lock was ranked second at 18.9% deep ball rate. So like, what's the difference? They both throw the ball deep. But the difference is Wilson actually completed most of his passes at 37%, while Drew Lock only completed 27% of his deep balls, which was third worst among qualified quarterbacks last year. The quarterbacks that he was keeping company with were Sam Darnold and Jared Goff. You know, it's not
where you want to be.
No, it's definitely not where you want to be. So yeah, I mean, Lockett still will see deep targets, but like we saw with Cortland Sutton last year, they're not going to be good.
Listen, anytime I have to talk about Drew Lock for, you know, analysis, I just remember his quote from a couple years ago. Like, it was along the lines of, half the time I drop back and throw and go, oh no. Like, that's what he said.
Like, that's amazing.
And that it's accurate with when you watch him. It's just like a lot of, like, he's got like some Jay Cutler in him where just like, he'll make any throw. He doesn't care.
So Lockett is coming off. This surprised me a little bit. Really, the only ADP data we have right now is from, you know, best ball for the most part, leagues where mostly sharper players are playing. And Lockett is the wide receiver 21, which really surprises me. Here's a list of players going behind him, and I would draft every single one of those.
Yeah,
players.
He's my wide receiver 35 right now. So
I honestly am having to scroll before I find a player that I would not take. Or that I would take him after. Here's Amari Cooper, Amon-Ra St. Brown, Devonta Smith, Chris Godwin, Michael Thomas, Michael Pittman, Mike Thomas, Marquise Brown, Darnell Mooney, Hunter Renfrow, Gabe Davis, Brandon Cooks, Brandon Ayuk. I would draft every single one of those players.
Yeah, we differ on this. I would prefer, I'm worried about Renfrow. I probably could lump him in here as a bust. I just think a huge part of what he, and to be fair, this is like I think a huge part of his season was because Waller was getting double teamed. But he's obviously not going to see. He's going to see. Renfrow's going to see single coverage, probably be left alone at the time with Adams there now. This.
Yeah, I agree with you.
But there. Adams is just going to like, he's not going to be Rodgers and Adams type target share 30%. But like
fine.
Yeah, and like
take Renfrow out of the list of players I just mentioned. I would still draft that. Yeah. I just listed like 15 players.
Exactly. The only ones that were even close for me were Hollywood Brown and Renfrow and Ayuk. Those are the only ones that were even close. Like Mooney, no question. Smith, no question. Like Lockett's going to, like, he's still talented enough to have a couple spike weeks, but like, remember how often it'd be, oh, is it a Metcalf or a Lockett week? Like, there's going to be weeks where instead of one or the other, it's just both just struggle.
Yeah.
It's just going to happen. Any other receivers? Like, I had a receiver I was going to mention, but he's not being drafted relatively high anyway. But like Robert Woods coming off the ACL, new team, so much of his game. And again, this is literally one of my favorite receivers in the NFL. I think he's the most underrated receiver in the NFL. But the Rams used him so well, pre-snap motion. Nobody was in pre-snap motion more than Robert Woods the last couple years. I don't know if the Titans are going to do that. They're also in a more run-heavy offense with Derrick Henry. And Robert Woods, in my opinion, is the best blocking receiver in the NFL. I'm sure they'll like to get him out blocking in front of Derrick Henry. So Robert Woods, love him, but just not expecting much with the Titans. I kind of mentioned Renfrow. The only other one is Chase Claypool. I just think it's going to be more so, you know, he was obviously bad last year. He can't get worse because, like, maybe they can take some shots down the field. And I know Juju's gone, but I think the offense is going to kind of still be, you know, the focal point will still be Deontay Johnson, Najee Harris, and Pat Freiermuth, actually, more so than Claypool.
I actually don't agree with you on Claypool, but I totally understand the argument. And I've seen several smart people say that they're scared about him this year. So it's maybe making me reconsider a little bit, but I've been pretty firmly in the Big Ben was the Claypool problem camp.
Yeah. I mean,
so, but let's be honest, Mitchell Trubisky is like is that really an upgrade?
It is, but like I'm not sitting like I don't expect Mitchell Trubisky to just like throw outside the numbers, you know, deep very often either. This is still a team that say what you want about Pittsburgh, but like their roster is still good. Their defense is still good. They're not gonna, you know, roll over that division, so they're gonna rely on their defense, maybe make some upgrades to the offensive line and you know, play conservative on offense, whether that's with Trubisky, whether that's with whoever they bring in at quarterback, if they bring somebody else in via the draft, like that's going to be their philosophy. So like, I just think this entire passing offense outside of maybe Deontay doesn't have a massive ceiling until they get like a complete overhaul at quarterback and just get like kind of like a face of the franchise type player, which they clearly don't have.
And it's not going to happen in this draft.
No. So, all right, let's close out with tight end. I have a handful of tight ends. Hunter Henry is the first one, kind of in the same argument with Deebo Samuel in terms of regression. Hunter Henry just scored a ton of touchdowns last year. 50 catches, but 9 went for touchdowns. Nearly 18% of his targets came in the end zone last year. And, like, only Mark Andrews saw more end zone targets at the position. They gave Henry that massive deal in the offseason last year. They also gave a ton of money to Jonnu Smith, who got a 4-year, $50 million deal and barely used him. I don't know how they don't use him again this year. I just think Hunter Henry, touchdowns, can't predict. This is still a run-first offense. I thought they would add some more receivers in the offseason. They really didn't, but Hunter Henry is kind of an easy avoid for me.
I think you can make the same case. Devontae Parker, but I don't think that's right. They did bring in Parker. But I don't know if that helps Henry.
I was going to say Parker can easily get those end zone targets. That's a good point. I completely forgot they brought in Parker. And you can, I don't want to do it because I'm a Bills fan, but like Dawson Knox had a pretty interesting, like he's getting compared to Robert Tonyan. I don't want to make that comparison because like Dawson Knox is actually good and he's playing, like he has a legitimate rapport with Josh Allen. The two are like best friends. I don't know if it's Cooper Kupp, Matthew Stafford type breakfast level, but they like are very close. But still, the touchdown rate was pretty high. It's not like he saw like, it's not like he wasn't targeted. Like, he still is a part of the offense outside of the red zone. But O.J. Howard, we'll see what his usage is with Buffalo now. They still have Diggs. Gabriel Davis has been a massive player in terms of end zone targets whenever he's in the field for Buffalo. And he's going to be a full-time player now this year, you project. Maybe they add somebody at receiver. I think they do at one point. Maybe not in the first round. So you can make that same argument for Dawson Knox, and I totally get it. But I have like more concerns with Henry in that department.
I like the Knox argument. I mean, his 9 touchdowns were great, but he only caught 49 passes and fewer than 600 yards.
Mm-hmm.
It's
listen, I tried to sweep it under the rug because I'm a Bills fan, but like without being biased, I totally understand Dawson Knox being a bust. Like I've been in drafts where I've seen Knox on the board and Henry on the board, and I just wait and take Zach Ertz because Zach Ertz goes pretty late right now. And I don't think Ertz has the ceiling for touchdowns as those two, but Zach Ertz could literally finish top 3 in targets at the position this year. And I wouldn't be shocked.
Yeah. I agree with that. I mean, I don't have it in front of me, but Ertz's target share was pretty ridiculous when, especially once he got acclimated in Arizona. Yep.
Anybody else tight end? Like I have Darren Waller written down to an extent. Obviously it's obvious, right? Like he's now competing with targets with Devonta Adams and Hunter Renfrow is still gonna be part of that offense.
I have,
what do you think about Waller than any other tight ends that you, have before we get out of here?
Yeah. Waller is definitely a bust candidate. That one definitely depends on price because there's still such a huge tier gap. Mm-hmm. You got Kelce, Andrews, Pitts, Waller, Kittle, you know, maybe you can argue Gronk if he returns. And then there's a tier gap. And I do think Waller is still before that tier gap, but he's not as high up before. Like I would 100% take Kyle Pitts and George Kittle over Waller now.
Yeah, Pitts for sure. Kittle's a little close, but like the one thing I will say, like Darren Waller, so much bracket coverage last year. That will not happen this year, which is great for him. But the overall target share most likely goes down too. The one that's close for me, I don't think I'm going to get that aggressive. But if you wanted to rank Dalton Schultz over Darren Waller, I wouldn't call you crazy.
Ooh, that one's interesting. I don't think I would do that, but
let me double check to make sure I actually don't have it ranked that way because I love Dalton Schultz.
While you check that,
okay. I have Dalton Schultz 6 and Waller 5th, so I don't have. I'm not quite Goddard 2. If you wanted to go Goddard,
I could see Goddard, but
right, they're 5, 6, and 7 for me.
The player going a little bit further down the list, being drafted as a tail end tight end one is Mike Gesicki, and he does scare me this year.
Same.
I don't think he's improperly priced necessarily. I think drafting him in like the 10 to 12 range is fine, but I don't think he's going to be as good as he was last year. He had 73 catches for 780 yards. He had the third most air yards among all tight ends, and he had the fourth most targets. Only Andrews, Kelsey, and Zach Ertz had more targets. But, you know, obviously adding Tyreek Hill completely changes the dynamic of that offense and who's going to get looks. And Tyreek Hill, despite what he's known for as a deep ball threat, he does see a lot of these underneath passes. And I think we talked about this on a previous pod. He's going to be given the ball in space. And so that will take away some of those Gesicki targets, I think.
Yeah.
And now, on the flip side, though, Gesicki only did catch 2 touchdowns.
Which yeah, is like he's really going to score more. But I also think he doesn't see that, like you mentioned, like I don't think people realize he was third at the position in targets. He was third, right?
He was third in air yards,
fourth or fifth, in targets. Fifth in targets, yeah. Or fourth in targets. So like I think he scores more. The other thing is we know Miami uses him as a slot receiver, right? Like he's like 70% of the slot
right
as a receiver. That could go down with Tyreek Hill there now because Waddle and Tyreek have to play. You still have Cedric Wilson there they brought in. I'm not saying he's going to play more than Mike Gesicki, but obviously the Devontae Parker trade helps the playing time because you can just play Tyreek or Waddle. Like Tyreek and Waddle can play out wide too. But for me, it's as simple as this. You know, Jalen Waddle and Tyreek Hill are the focal points of this offense. Tua Tagovailoa is going to have the breakout year of all breakout years to support 2 top 20 receivers and a top 10 tight end in fantasy. That's my concern. Sorry to burst your bubble, but I don't think that's happening either. I think this was I don't know how we revisit this in a couple months because we broke down a lot of players, but obviously things will change. We have the NFL draft in a couple weeks, which I am excited for. We're going to have some draft content on the pod starting next week. Again, would have started it, you know, months ago, but this pod's only 3 episodes in and we appreciate all the support. Again, this is episode 3. If you can give us a rating, review, all that great stuff on iTunes, anywhere you listen to the podcast, again, we appreciate it. Also, check out some of the other podcasts. I mean, Josh Larkey is now doing the FTN Fantasy Football Podcast with Ray GQ. They had their first episode together last week, so make sure you check that out. All the baseball content, you know, baseball, we had a sub takedown, I think it was like 15K in a tournament.
15K, yeah.
Yeah, like the baseball content's been crushing.
We also have a bunch of players, a bunch of subs and FTN staffers currently in first place in the delayed USFL contest.
Yeah, I did see that. Larky's doing good. I believe it's Sam's doing really well. Yeah, so got a lot of really sharp people over at FTN Fantasy, FTN Daily, and FTN Bets. So again, baseball just started. Basketball, we still have playoff basketball, so we'll have plenty of content for that until the NBA Finals. So keep it locked here. Again, appreciate all the support. Tyler, any closing thoughts here before we get out of here and start the week off here in the middle of April?
I don't think so. I'm hyped for draft season. There's so much of what we've talked about so far could just get blown up from the draft and what teams do. So I always love this time of year. It shakes things up. So excited to dive into some rookie prospects next week.
Yeah, and I will say, just a precursor, if Chris Olave is drafted by the Packers, for instance, I will not shut up about him because he's obviously a better talent and is going to be a higher draft pick than him. But last year was Amon-Ra St. Brown was like the player I just couldn't shut up about. This year it's Chris Olave. So if he gets drafted by Green Bay, I'm all in.
What if the Bills draft him? Not that I think that makes a ton of sense, but what if they do?
I don't think he'll be there at 25, but if they do, yeah.
We will not hear the end of it, that's for sure.
No, they're going to draft Breece Hall. I'm going to be pissed, but I'm going to get it because Singletary's a free agent. But we'll talk about all that when the draft happens. Appreciate everybody for listening. Again, check out FTN Fantasy, FTN Daily, and FTN Bets for all the amazing content. Follow myself on Twitter at AFIFER24 and Tyler on Twitter at LochnerNFL. We'll see you guys next week. Have a good one.
Thanks for listening to the FTN Datacast. Be sure to rate, review, and subscribe. And follow the hosts on Twitter @APfeiffer24 and @LochnerNFL.